Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 29, I'm joined by film producer Samira Musa. Samira began her career focusing on fashion whilst on an art foundation course, but switched direction and went on to complete a film, media and cultural studies degree at Middlesex University in 2012. On graduating, Samira worked in a number of different companies in both production assistant and producer capacity, but then secured a position as head of production at WADA Network, Somalia's first online TV platform. Whilst there, she worked on a range of formats, talk shows, children's animations, and short films, which she produced in a number of different countries across the globe. Driven to add more diverse content and filmmakers to the industry, she was inspired and co-founded The Creative Roots with Alex Da Silva. The production agency aims to drive change both on and off screen through selecting to produce projects that tend to be sidelined or ignored. Productions in which The Creative Roots has supported to date are Fate, a British-Somali film challenging the pressures of weddings in the Somali community, and The Cost of Bronze, a film about a woman who refuses to be erased. Samira is currently in development for a documentary focusing on the LGBTQ community in Nigeria. Samira, I'm super pleased to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Wow, thank you very much. What an introduction.
Well, it's all the amazing things that you've done.
Great, I'm just going to take that and put it on my bio.
Perfect, it's yours. Well, it is yours. Okay, so can we kick off with what is it a film producer does?
So a film producer is someone who gets the ball rolling from the offset. Firstly, a script, then finance, and then gets the crew on board, and then keeps the production rolling from sometimes from pre-production, production, and post. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a producer for each section. So a producer just for the development phase, or a producer for the production phase, and then one for post-production. But I go across the board in majority of my independent films. Mm-hmm. But majority of the time when I was working on sets, it would be in the production phase and some of the development phase. So that's what a producer does.
Okay. And do you seek out the scripts, or do the scripts come to you via people wanting to make a film? How does that work?
So a number of ways. So mm-hmm. one is people coming to you mm-hmm. And, you know, saying, hey, I've got this great idea and this great script. Mm-hmm. And you have to read quite a lot of scripts. Yeah. And then another one, especially for documentaries, is stories you hear or books that you read. And then you start investigating whether they can be turned into a film or a documentary and who owns the rights. And then there's this whole system, like a rabbit hole that you go down. Mm-hmm. And then another one, sometimes you come up with some of the kind of like a synopsis of something you're thinking of, and then give it to a director or a scriptwriter, and then they create a masterpiece and you're like, oh, that's not what I was thinking, that's actually better.
So can we talk about your career journey from kind of where it began, as I mentioned, foray in fashion early on, up until now?
So I've had a very a range of careers over my lifetime. I feel very old when I say that, but...
You're not.
But, I'm not, yeah. But I feel like I should be. I started off in fashion. I love fashion. I enjoyed the creative arts as a whole. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, I couldn't afford to stay in fashion. It wasn't something that I could sustain. And my family was just like, fashion, really? Mm. We thought it was a hobby and we were going to let it go. So my mum really pushed me to do something along the finance route, mm-hmm. accounting or anything legal, accounting, doctor, any of those in, you know, that would earn me a golden star. Mm-hmm. She kind of really kind of pushed me towards. Mm-hmm. Then I was like, okay, how about I do that, but then also pick up film, because I was also studying film at school. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, fine, you can do that as a hobby now. So I dropped fashion for that reason. Going through, I started really kind of discovering what film was like, what roles would be right for me. Mm-hmm. Start making tea on set, as you know, as we all do. Mm-hmm. And then slowly and slowly and surely, I started to kind of make music videos, started to be on a production manager, a production assistant, a runner, editing assistant. I just kind of did any role anyone would really give me, mm-hmm. to be fair. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it now, I've not really kind of looked that far back. I was like a hungry teenager who was just wanting to learn so much about the space. Uh-huh. And over the years, I started to build like a more of a reputation as someone who's like really organised. And I landed a really good gig quite as soon as I left university in a feature film. Mm-hmm. It was a great great first kind of experience. It was an indie film, which means really low budget, which means it doesn't have the infrastructure as a big production would. Mm-hmm. It's not a team of 50 or 70 or 100. It's a team of 12, I think it was in the end, crew members, which means everyone doubled up on roles. Yeah. You get stuck in. And as the newbie, and as you know, I joined as a runner, I was just like given things like to try to see if I could do it. And they loved it. And I was like, yes. So I started line producing with them. And then I started doing first AD and I just fell in love with it. And I ended up getting a credit as a first AD, which for me was great because I started off as a runner. Yeah. But it was also one of the toughest experiences of my life. Like, it was back to back for 15 days. I don't know if it was 15, it felt like 15 days. I'm sure it was like 10 to 15 days across the UK. And I was just like, is this what film really is? And I got given a glimpse of what indie film is and not big production films. Yeah. And I loved it, but also hated it. And then I came out feeling exhausted. I had a full-time job, so I had to manage that and juggle that as well. And I just finished uni, so I didn't have a break. Yeah. And working at Apple at that time, it's not somewhere you can just DOS. It is somewhere I'd built up a reputation where I had great customer satisfaction. I had great relationships with my colleagues. I couldn't just coast.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're a high achiever, you can't coast. It's not something that you can just carry on. I thought, oh, no, this is not for me. Like, maybe I got it wrong. Mm-hmm. I really started to doubt myself. And then I decided at that point to come out of film and just to do it as a hobby. Like my mum said, just do it as a hobby and then get a real job. So I got a real job as a branding and marketing project manager, accountant manager.
I was like, you laughed.
At yeah, that's a proper job. Yeah. Mum was like, you're wearing a suit. You're going to work. Yes, done. So
gold star.
One gold star. Not a lawyer, but you can get one gold star. And that's kind of where my passion for film really took off on the side. Yeah. And I started dabbling in short films. I started dabbling in live events. And I think that first production that I did, big production that I did, really stung me in the film industry. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should go at it slower and just start again. And that's kind of how I started again. Mm-hmm. Stayed in working with the branding agency as an account manager, joined in as a executive account manager, went to account manager and then was going to senior, but then decided to leave and pursue my career in film. And then from there, I kind of jumped from one small production to another to try and make ends meet, as well as kind of passion projects, which you always do for nothing, but you love. So I learned a lot through that. And then I landed one project after the other and then ended up falling into finance in the film sector. So I did production accountant, which is quite interesting because as a producer, if I look back now, I was gaining skills as a producer. So I was kind of doing branding and marketing for 2 years for these, you know, huge hospitality chains like Marriott, Four Seasons. For me was actually one of the best things I could have done because I gained such a skill on how to market your film or market a product. Going to do Apple and working in technology allowed me to understand cameras and logic and Final Cut and editing. So I was gaining skills that would mean that I would all come together and be a producer. But I didn't know that at the time. So I felt like I was jumping around. And then I landed a really good production role. Again, but as a production accountant, and I learned a lot with EAM, who are a fantastic film accounting firm as well. And then I went off and decided to join WADA for a short period of time as their production head of production, which was fabulous. I learned a lot, again, trying to make such amount of content in such a small amount of time, working with influencers. And I was like, wow, I can do this on my own. And then I decided to make that jump and set up the Creative Roots. That's kind of where my journey is now. Sorry, that's very long-winded.
No, you've done so much, like jumping around as well. How amazing to work in film finance as well.
Yes, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
The information I learned and what I learned during that time, and I was like, oh, you can get so much money to do this kind of film. And this is how a cost report should really look.
Yeah.
And then I really started to understand the difference between indie filmmaking, documentary filmmaking, and feature filmmaking, and for me, and then commercials. So for me, it kind of gave me this broad look from the background and like really understand film financing, understand where the money goes from, who are these investors that have cash to give. But yeah, it was a very interesting time. Negotiating, you see the negotiations even with, you know, people like Channel 4, BBC, you see what their terms are, you get at such an amazing array of information. And it was great. Like, did that for nearly a year, so.
Yeah.
Great for a producer.
So I'm wondering if you can tell me at a high level, mm-hmm. kind of what is the process from beginning to end for a film producer? So you touched on it earlier, mm-hmm. but maybe you see a script or a script comes to you. Mm-hmm. What is the process from beginning to end?
You would see or receive a script. You would vet it. You would see if it would be good for the market mm-hmm. that you're essentially in. You would then go to a director, a scriptwriter, and pitch that script to them. Mainly a scriptwriter for me, because I like to double check the script structure, the characters, whether it's, you know, a good script. Mm-hmm. Once we have that on board and we all agree with my co-founder that this is a good script and we would like to take it forward, we would then have sit downs and meetings with the writer, the author, the original author, and figure out what it is that they'd like to have as the end medium, mm-hmm. whether it's a film, a TV series. Then once we understand what the deliverables are, then we would start to look for funding with those deliverables in mind. Once we secure funding, we would go into pre-production or development, which is kind of taking the script deeper, getting the scriptwriter to work with the director a lot closer. Mm-hmm. We would then take that and move it into pre-production, and then really kind of preparing what that looks like, scheduling, where are we shooting, location scouting. And then once we've secured all of those, we would then go into production, and that's actually shooting. Once we're happy with that, we've shot everything that we wanted to shoot from the original script and the amendments throughout, we would then go into post-production, and post-production is essentially the editing, the composing, and then picture lock. Once we've done picture lock, we would then go to market, which you've already pre-had those conversations, and distribution, and then that is where you'd either see your film either in cinema or on TV or on Netflix or any of the above.
It's quite a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And how do you sustain that?
In terms of sustain, do you mean how do I financially...
Keep your energy up, keep focused. I'm sure you're not always just working on one script or mm-hmm. one project.
Mm-hmm. I think the way I keep my energy up is I tend to go for scripts that I love. Uh-huh. I don't go for scripts because they're going to make me money. Yeah. Like, that is obviously a factor because mm-hmm. we need to recoup mm-hmm. and investors want to hear that. But I love the storyline, I love the characters, I love who has written it. So for me, the energy is actually comes from the people and the script itself. Mm-hmm. And seeing an end product at the end and seeing it on the screen is like phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So we have the documentary at the moment, which is already in its 8th month mm-hmm. and we're still in development stage. But if it wasn't something I loved, we could have been like, oh, this is taking too much of your time. It's not, you know, in terms of if you look at P&L, yeah. it's actually at a loss right now. Yeah. You'd be like, do you want to cut your losses? But actually, it's not really about that. It's the long game. You play the long game. And if you're in it for the long game, then producing's for you. If you're in for producing in this kind of context is yeah. for you. But if you're in it for a short game, then maybe commercials producing or some of the smaller, quick turnaround projects are better for you.
And where do you go when you say you go to investors for finance? How does that work? Who wants to invest? Who wants to make the films or the TV series?
It depends. I say it depends a lot because with producing it is a lot of factors. For the documentaries, it's mainly at the moment private investment. Mm-hmm. For the short films, it's sometimes the director has mm-hmm. the money. We've done crowdfunding to finish The Cost of Bronze. Mm-hmm. And now I have a little black book of investors mm-hmm. who I go to with scripts or with projects, and I say, okay, these are the projects, these are the scripts I'd like to go forward. What are your take on it? Would you like to go forward, invest, mm-hmm. Or advise? Or they actually kind of say, actually, I wouldn't, but I know somebody who would. Region specific is quite nice, actually. So, for example, when we were doing the documentary, we're actually looking at specific investors from that region or that area, mm-hmm. so Nigeria. Mm-hmm. So that's how we find investors. Mm-hmm. Investors who are already in the space, or investors who aren't in the space but have decided that they want to dabble and that the cause or the story is in alignment with their values and morals mm-hmm. As well. So that's how we find investors.
Okay. So I guess another part of your role is a lot of networking and meeting people, and the black book's obviously critical to kind of going forward as well.
Yeah, networking. I love networking. I'm so happy I love networking, because otherwise it'd be a tough, tough industry. I enjoy talking to people, mm-hmm. and most of the time I end up, like, I think I met one investor. I was sat there having a coffee and we were just chatting about, like, I think colours or something. It was nothing to do with investing. Mm-hmm. And then I later found out, I was telling him what I was doing. He was like, oh, I'm an investor. And then one thing led to another and he's now invested in the Costa Bronze. I'm like, oh, okay. So investors come in all shapes and sizes, and they also don't wear a massive cloak that says, I have money.
Yeah.
I want to give it away. Mm-hmm. And it's about building trust. And that's kind of the fundamental thing that I really start with. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do I build trust with somebody first? And then later on, you know, whether it's money or a skill they offer or support in other ways, mm-hmm. it kind of comes a really, it's a much easier conversation.
Wow. My gosh, you have so many things you have to think about. And yeah, and it's also like you're saying, that rapport with people, being able to build up trust. And
yeah,
it is a long game.
It is a long game.
Yeah.
It's a long game, and it's a financially long game as well, as a producer. Like, there's no sugarcoating what I do. It's tough. Mm-hmm. And someone from my economical background really shouldn't be here. I should be in a job, mm-hmm. getting paid Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. But I've chosen and kind of really put myself in a position where I can do this.
Yeah.
And it's taken me years to do this. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, you know, learning new ways to... I budget myself, like, mm-hmm. I have a budget which I run by, mm-hmm. but it's a long game, and it's also believing in others, mm-hmm. and that is the best thing you can ever do, like, investing in somebody else.
Yeah.
I was like, you can't, there's second to none, and that's why I love what I do. Just, you get to see someone's story and then they say, oh, I'd love to see it on screen, and you're like, let's make it happen. And it might take 2 years, it might take mm-hmm. 5, it might take 6 months,
yeah.
but it's going to happen at some point.
Amazing. That's incredible.
Yeah. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so lovely as well, like, having a producer support you on a project as well, especially someone that really believes in a project. So, yeah you sound like ideal.
I sound ideal. That's why I don't take too many on.
Yeah.
You can't... You spread yourself too thin.
That's right.
So I only have 4 projects at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I have to run a second company, which isn't film-related, but that's kind of how I keep myself and everybody... Give everyone a fair chance, mm-hmm. because I could take on 25 different projects and hire other people to do those projects, but then you lose that connection, and you also lose the chance to support people growing in different ways. And also, I've grown so much just by, like, listening and them giving me feedback, and I'm like, it's phenomenal. I'm like, yeah, give me feedback. What would you like to learn? What can we change? Mm-hmm. How can I grow? How can we grow as a team? And there are points that are tough, and there are points where you have to, like, just suck it up and be like, okay, I got that. I won't do that. and there are times when you have to be tough, and it's just, it is a people's game. It's not really a money game.
Yeah.
I know they say the film business is a business, and it is a business, but it's a people business. It's not a financially lucratively embodying business. It will be in the long haul, but not at the beginning.
So who are you working with?
I typically
work. Like, you're kind of your immediate team when you're working.
So I have my co-founder, who's also a producer. I have a directors. I have TOPs, which I trust, camera operators, and script writers. They're kind of my core team. And then we hire everybody else in, whether it's a production coordinator, production manager. Again, depending on the size of the film.
So scaling up, scaling down.
Scaling up, scaling down.
Okay.
But I keep the 5 of those really close. Uh-huh. And I have multiple people in different... genres that they want to produce. One director's not going to be able to be directing every single one of our TV series, documentaries, or short films. Mm-hmm. So we have different directors that we keep in the book, essentially, and we keep in contact with on a regular basis. We have a lot of people who are changing careers as well, which I love supporting, because they have a wealth of talent from somewhere else in different industries, and we're like, yeah, come on over. So yeah,
amazing.
That's my core team.
So Samira, is there a typical day?
So there's not. Every day is different. Every day, it's one of those things with producing, you just don't have the same hour, let alone the same day. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I was stacked, today I'm a bit more free, and then I'm working all the way through to Monday, and then I fly out. So it's never the same, but it's part of the perks of the job. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you're dead for a couple of days. That never happens.
Catching up, but still working.
Yeah.
Okay, so the role is demanding.
Yes.
So both creatively, but also within this kind of organisational business, finance, networking side of things. So how do you manage all this responsibility?
I try and think of it in a way that I don't know if I'm managing it or whether it's become normal to me. to really kind of what I call juggle mm-hmm. and spin loads of plates. And sometimes I do accidentally don't spin a plate quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a very clear communication with my team and with my external partners in terms of directors. And like I explain where I am, mm-hmm. what I'm doing, what my months looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So they understand that if I haven't responded to their emails, it's because another film is in production and I need to give that film my attention
mm-hmm.
or I need to do this for a little period of time. And as long as you communicate, I found that I can manage. But the moment I shut off, then everybody, it just goes chaotic because
mm-hmm.
everyone wants your attention. My phone is constantly buzzing, like all the time. It's on flight mode right now, which is great. but I also have notifications switched off at certain periods.
Yeah.
So my managing is actually to the detail. So my emails don't come on till 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't open my emails the first thing I do. Mm-hmm. I have specific days where I just zone out and it's mm-hmm. an admin day.
Mm-hmm.
I have fitness every morning, so mm-hmm. I will go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be slightly regimented
mm-hmm.
with a few things and then everything else will flow in between. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I manage it. But technology has been a great help and mm-hmm. being able to switch off notifications at time, how much I'm on social media, how much I'm just passively scrolling
mm-hmm.
versus trying to find new DOPs and directors or mm-hmm. who I can connect with and stuff like that. And I'm now moving to a space where I'm trying to connect more via Skype
mm-hmm.
rather than face-to-face meetings. So that will save a lot more time as well.
Mm. Sounds like you are really good at like protecting yourself as well, making sure that you have time, like you're saying, for fitness,
yeah.
not getting notifications all the time, because it can just be then a non-stop barrage of...
Because I've been there, like there was a point where my phone just didn't stop ringing.
Mm.
Like the notifications were going off on every single social media,
mm-hmm.
they were going off on all three different email accounts, they were going off on the company email that I was working with. I was like, I cannot breathe. And I had a breakdown, so you just do. And then I was like, okay, it's not their challenge to deal with, it's my challenge.
Mm.
And the moment you start reflecting about what you can do and what you can control,
mm-hmm.
that's when I was like, okay, these notifications need to stop. Nothing is urgent.
Mm-hmm.
I had a sense that back in the day, I used to get an email, it'd be answered within a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get a text message, it'd be answered within a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I set expectations that I would always respond. And it took me a very long time to weed that away
mm-hmm.
because I couldn't just go cold turkey because
yeah.
everyone would be like, what happened to Samira?
She
got off the bed.
She's disappeared. She hasn't responded in a minute.
Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, but now everyone knows I respond specific days and like, but it takes a while. And again, it's communication and kind of understanding that. But it took me a while to build that, because if you don't build that protection around yourself, you can just get lost in the sauce, as I call it, and you don't come out for months or the rabbit hole.
Gosh, that's such great advice, because I think a lot of us get caught up in that, don't we? It's just busy. You just get emails and they're coming in. And
yeah. The word busy, I try and avoid. Like, and it's really hard, like trying to avoid the word, oh, I'm busy. I'm like, actually today I'm stacked,
mm-hmm.
which means I'm back to back.
Mm-hmm.
Then it makes you think, okay, great.
So The Creative Roots is a company you co-founded with Alex Da Silva, and it's focused on creating change both on and off screen in relation to the projects it chooses to work with. So can you talk about how this came about and how it functions?
The shorter story is, for me, I came out feeling like I wanted to start something different, specifically because of everything that was happening with the change around diversity on camera.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of campaigns. The Me Too movement was also a big factor, making people feel safe in the space within the film industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I wish we could just talk about people off camera as well, because everyone's talking about everyone on camera.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, you know, the stories are still being told the same way because the people behind the camera are still the same. It's the same kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I would really love to change that. So then I looked towards those in Hollywood, like Shonda Rhimes, who is doing a phenomenal job changing both on screen and off screen,
mm-hmm.
those roles and really making it diverse. And I was like, well, if we start from the bottom and they're doing it from the top, then we can squeeze the middle. And that's kind of how it came about. And that's where I asked Alex to come on board.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, yeah, this is great. And we evolved.
Uh-huh.
And this is kind of where we've landed. It only takes one person to start a revolution. So hopefully we're trying to be that first ignite in the indie space,
mm-hmm.
and just be like, oh, let's see if we can try and really push the diversity. And it's hard work. Of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just diversity as a BAME or race, gender specific. Mm-hmm. It's actually social, economical diversity. And that's what's really important to us.
Can you talk about some of the films that Creative Roots has produced? Because I mentioned Fate and I mentioned
The Cost of Bronze.
So yeah, maybe a little background on those or other things that you've worked on.
Yeah, so Fate was my first Somali-only film, mm-hmm. working with some amazing, talented creative team. Fate has a very personal story mm-hmm. behind it. So Fate was started 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make one film that encompassed my culture, mm-hmm. and I'd never done it before. So Fate is that piece. Mm-hmm. It's where Fate is the film that I learned Somali all over again. Like, I learned my native language again. Mm-hmm. Fate is the film that introduced me to the Somali creative. Mm-hmm. Fate is the film that introduced me to the Somali social media teams, influencers. Mm-hmm. Fate kind of really kind of reintroduced me to my culture as well. Mm-hmm. And I'd been so kind of stayed away from my culture for a very long time, not on purpose, just life has you chasing other dreams. And mm-hmm. yeah, Fate was the film that kind of really found my two loves, like my culture and film. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where Fate comes from. Mm-hmm. And I work with Ali Naji, who is the director, and Saeed Fadir, who's the DOP and camera operator, to really kind of bring this to life. It was the smallest crew. We had like a 5-man crew, me, Ali, Saeed, and two sound, Osman and Abdurrahman, all Somali men, and me. And interestingly, Ali set me this task and said, I want to make a British Somali film with only Somali crew, cast and crew. And I was like, I don't know anybody other than you. So I had to learn this entire space. And there are people out there, yeah. I just wasn't operating in it.
Yeah.
So for me, I learned so much. So that's Fate.
Yeah.
It is about a young girl and this relationship that she kind of, you don't know whether it's truth or whether she's dreaming about this wedding. Mm-hmm. And it was about this couple who really, at the beginning, you're like, oh, they're the sweetest couple. Mm-hmm. And then something happens to him. He disappears. She tries to find him and she can't find him. And then we flash forward to a couple of years and she's getting married again. But she's hallucinating that he's there with her. And there's this sense of, wow, like, this wedding is putting so much pressure on her that she's hallucinating about a man that she hasn't seen in over 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And she's thinking she's marrying him, but she might not be. And that's what the film is about.
Sounds intense.
It's very intense. You know, and there's bits that you laugh and there's bits that you like, wow. And we did a private screening in a Somali restaurant. Uh-huh. And we just filled this room with like all our friends and family and, you know, mixed Somali and non-Somali. It's in English. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing for me as a filmmaker, firstly, to watch like a Somali film that I made. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. My mum would be so proud. She was not, by the way. She was like, you made a film. Like, really? Another one? Like...
Gold star, taken down.
I was like, damn it. But like, that's the thing, I think, for me, like, that's what Fate is. And The Cost of Bronze brought me and Alex together, so it has another element. Me and George is a phenomenal director as well. Mm-hmm. He really champions women. And I think The Cost of Bronze brought an entire different team for me together. Mm-hmm. And it's a great story about two siblings who have to reconcile their relationship with each other and their mother. Mm-hmm. As their mother's passed away. And it seemed like it resonated a lot with the people who donated. Thank you guys. to the crowdfunding. Yeah. So I just, at the moment, I've been blessed to work with some phenomenal mm-hmm. cast and crew. And for me, I've learned so much. Like I said at the beginning, it's not just about them learning, it's about me learning. And I've taken a lot on from both. And now we're working on the documentary. The documentary, this director, Rashida, oh my God, this girl is on fire. I'm just like, how? She's just had a baby. She's like, oh no, I took a week break and went back to work. I was like, damn, girl. She's phenomenally talented and great writer, great director. So yeah, that's the productions at the moment.
What skills do you need to be a film producer?
There's a couple of things you need. There's interpersonal skills, communication, negotiation skills. Mm. You need to have a level head. Ego goes out the window when you're a producer. It's not really about you. Good at organising, budgets, getting a crew together. So there's a lot of skills you need, but fundamentally it's just about, you're the lighthouse mm-hmm. in the production, so people will come to you for direction. Mm-hmm. And you're also the lighthouse to find new films. And that's kind of how you are. That's what your skills would be.
Okay. So what's one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
There's so many. You couldn't have had the diverse careers I've had mm-hmm. without challenges. Mm-hmm. But each one of them has seen me grow and mm-hmm. develop to be so much better. Mm-hmm. There's ones that I was just like, oh my God, this is about me. And you're like, it's actually not about you. There are ones where you think, this production is not going to go ahead. Mm-hmm. And you have that sick feeling in your stomach mm-hmm. and it goes ahead. Mm-hmm. There are so many challenges, but they're all worth it. And every single one of them, every battle scar that you have in a film production, they're all worth it. And just learn from every challenge, reflect like there's no tomorrow, because you can learn so much. And give yourself time as a producer to sit back and see how the project went, what went wrong, what went right, who worked really well with you. Don't just jump on the next project, because you don't learn by just going. You will, but there'll be a point where you can just be like, actually, if I do this in the next one, and you've already then set yourself up for success. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of important.
So what do you love about being a film producer?
Everything. The fact that you can do so many different things.
Yeah.
The fact that you're having a conversation about negotiating a contract, and then the next day you're talking about, oh, what camera kit are we going to get? Like, if we get this camera or this lens. But, you know, then you have a camera team that you kind of like speak to, and they're like, actually, if we use this camera instead, we can get the same effect. Everything. Everything about, absolutely everything. I love producing. I love being behind the camera. Mm-hmm. I enjoy being with the team on production. There's probably areas I don't like so much, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it's like a bit of a high. And then when the production's done, it's a bit of a low.
Yeah, the calm down.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, I really enjoy it. I enjoy the initial stage of development and production. Production probably, if I had to pick, it probably would be production. Mm-hmm. It's the main bit that I'm like, oh, let's go.
Yeah. How do you fuel your creativity? What do you do? Where do you go?
For me, how I fuel my creativity is networking, a lot of learning. I do masterclass, mm-hmm. so I'm quite an avid online. I watch a lot of Netflix. I watch a lot of cinema. Mm-hmm.
Such a perk of the job, isn't it?
It's such a perk
of the job. It's like I'm working.
It's like, yeah, you're actually working. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I feel my creativity in terms of film. But then I also switch off in film, because sometimes when you're fully in something, you can't see something that's so obvious and glaring. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of time coaching. I spend a lot of time on fitness. Mm-hmm. So when I say coaching, mentoring, mm-hmm. Speaking to those, completely not in my sector, mm-hmm. Just so I can get a different perspective. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I have a lot of lawyers and accountants, which is great, mm-hmm. But not in my sector. fitness is a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. I work out at least 4 times a week. Mm-hmm. I have a really good studio that I go to at the moment called Cali Flow. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's fundamentally one of the main things that I keep. I love cardio. I love weights. Mm-hmm. I've gone back to strength training. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I use ClassPass to obviously jump around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's how I keep myself.
Keep you grounded.
Yeah, keep me grounded. Meditation is also coming into it a little bit, but not as much at the moment. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I'm finding my fuel to be having a lot more deep conversations with friends. Mm-hmm. So like really kind of taking part or interrogating a specific subject. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go into it in different ways.
So what advice would you give someone considering a career as a film producer?
Find a mentor that's a film producer already that you admire, mm-hmm. and ask them if you can just shadow them. That would be if someone gave me that advice, that's the one advice I wish I got given, because that is the one piece of advice. I'm still searching for someone that I'm like, who else can I talk to? Who can mentor me? Because it's a phenomenal thing when you have a mentor who is in your space and it's what you want to be, because they can really, A, open doors for you, not because that's what you want them to do, but they will naturally do.
Yeah.
And B, you learn so much from them. Mm-hmm. Just watching them, you can just observe and see how they interact with people, what they're doing, how they're writing their budgets, how much time they spend on it. Mm-hmm. Because actually that will give you a reality check, because producers don't sleep very often, mm-hmm. especially during a production. If you see how they live and you think, okay, I definitely want to do that and I want to be that person, then yeah. And do all different levels of producers. So finding someone who's just starting out, finding someone who's been in the industry for a little while, and finding someone who's really, because you can see where your life is going to be in those three stages.
What have you got coming up in the next few weeks and months? Probably a lot, I have a feeling. I feel like you're going to be stacked.
I am going to be stacked. No. So I'm actually off to Australia.
Oh,
I'm going on holiday. So I'm not doing anyway. No, I'm doing a little bit of work. I'm writing actually at the moment. Mm-hmm. So trying to, we've went for funding for a few short films, mm-hmm. and hopefully if those fundings come through, then I'll be in production for those. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a commercial for a remittance company, and at the moment just pitching for a fitness video. Mm-hmm. So not a lot in mm-hmm. terms of films, mm-hmm. but we've got those, the documentary and a couple of short films on slate and in development, and they'll slowly move forward. But at the moment it's just commercial work and a rest.
And a holiday. We're coming to the end of the interview. Something I ask everyone is, what is a career or job in the creative industries you know a little about, you'd like to know more? And secondly, who's a woman in the creative industries that you would like to hear or recommend to come on the podcast?
So when I came in, I was like, I don't know what role. And then I thought about it as I was talking. Obviously, I talk a lot. So I actually realised that the lawyers who write a lot of our film contracts, I'd love to hear more from them, where they started, how did they get into the film industry specifically? Mm. Why did you pick entertainment law over everything else? Yeah. It's not that lucrative, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is.
Well, we pay a lot, but compared to corporate law, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what got you into the space. And there's Mint & Co. They're actually a really good legal team.
Okay.
And they're a film, specifically entertainment industry. Uh-huh. So I'd love to hear from their story.
Okay.
But yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much, Samira, for coming in today. So lovely chatting to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to our editors, Daniel Clark and Laura Francis, and to Maria Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.